This episode of Ghost Stories is brought to you by Satrix, the leading provider of index tracking solutions in South Africa and a proud partner of Ghostmail. With no minimums and easy, low-cost access to local and global products via the Satrix Now online investment platform, everyone can own the market. Visit satrix.co.za for more information. Welcome to 2026. It is a new year and it is another fantastic year of podcasts right here on Ghostmail with your host, The Finance Ghost. And I'm so looking forward to that, of course. And it's another year with Satrix. I'm so happy to have you guys back. I mean, this is year, I want to say three. It might even be four at this stage. I'm actually not sure. I think it's three. It's really been a fantastic journey with the Satrix team. Just understanding ETFs, but also just getting to know the team and the nuts and bolts of how these things work, the investment ideas have come through. And of course, to end off 2025, there was a wonderful discussion with Rene Besson where we talked about the 25 years to get to this point. Highly recommend you go back and listen to that if you want to give yourself some context as to just how amazing this journey was to get to these ETFs that we now just take for granted. We just take for granted the fact that you can own the market with just a single investment every month, for example. It really is quite amazing and it is quite a journey. Today, we will be talking about a new product that is coming out from Satrix. So that's going to be quite exciting because the team is always innovating. They're always bringing new stuff to the fore. And to do that, we have Lauren Jacobs. She is a senior portfolio manager at Satrix. She is also no stranger to the Ghost Stories podcast. Lauren, you've done a couple of these now. I think you've done two. So welcome to the podcast. Happy New Year and thanks for doing this with me.
And happy new year to you, Ghost, and thanks for having me again, and all the best for 2026. Yeah, it's been an interesting time up until 2025, but yeah, onwards and upwards for the new year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be quite a year. I mean, it's gotten off to quite a start from a geopolitical perspective, so it's not going to be boring. I think that much we know for sure. But what we're talking about today is not geopolitics. We are talking about property. And actually, what makes that so interesting is that property sits somewhere between your sort of traditional equity exposure and then your debt exposure. So quite an interesting place in a portfolio. But before we even get to that, I think property remains an asset class that people are just very drawn to. It's a very contentious issue, the cost of property, because of course, it directly affects your cost of living. I think the conventional wisdom from our parents' generation especially is to own the house you live in. And then as soon as you can, go and buy an apartment and rent it out. You know, the classic advice was, well, buy your first apartment and then when you're ready to move on, you can rent that one out and then you buy the next place. I mean, this was kind of the dream that many of our parents put onto us, I think, with the best intentions. Unfortunately, that hasn't necessarily worked out super well in South Africa, depending where you bought. It's just the reality, unfortunately. So I don't do any of those things. I, at this stage, don't own the house I live in. I certainly don't have any investment properties. I prefer to have listed property stocks. But before we dig into this ETF, I was curious where you fall on that spectrum, Lauren, in terms of your approach to property and how you think about it. Do you prefer the listed stuff or a bit of bricks and mortar and admin that comes with it?
I'm in the bucket where I sort of fall into all three. So we own a home, we own a rental property, and we own property stocks. So nice. It's a very interesting time just in terms of how things are shaping up, not only in South Africa, but you know, around the world, around property. But for us, for me, I think I'm more of a conservative investor. I like to know like my house is going to be my house forever, but maybe it's just because I'm a little bit older. So I still subscribe to that kind of thought. And also unintentionally, the investment property came up. But again, like you said, the admin around it and the taxes, people don't understand that when they go into buying a property, you know, the transfer duty. Then if it's your own property, there might be a capital gains tax and the constant kind of cost of a property. If something goes wrong, and there's always something going wrong, you kind of need to make provision to have cash available for that to fix whatever's gone wrong or for your levies and your taxes and so on. And I think when you saw your parents, they had a property, you just lived on the property, you didn't know all of those costs that came with it. So that's just something if you are buying a bricks and mortar property or even an investment property to keep in mind just around how many costs are included in that lifespan of that property. And then again, in the olden days, your parents were like, oh, but I'm keeping it for you. And, you know, you're going to get this when I die. But then there's also that estate duty tax at the end that you're not aware of. So there's a lot of hidden costs around that. Yes, there is the security of knowing, you know, it's mine. I can go home every day. But yeah, it's just, there's always that double-edged sword around having that, but also the implied cost of it. It's an interesting ride. And yeah, that's kind of my view on it.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you. So I guess where I am on the spectrum is I would at some point probably have our, what I would call our forever home, but that's more around stability for family and children and proximity to schools, because the rental market can sometimes be very cruel around timing and what's available at the time you need to move. It's not a financial decision. Definitely not. And I quite enjoyed your comment around, you know, you kind of take for granted the costs your parents might have had. I mean, I've experienced that now. So the place we're now is a swimming pool. It's the first time I've been responsible for a swimming pool. Young kids love it, obviously, but I'm like, I think back, I'm like, wow, my parents went through a lot to make this thing work. Like, it costs you money all the time. I grew up in Joburg where the weather's good a lot. So we used it all the time. Down in Cape Town, it's like every few days, depending how windy your suburb is. But anyway, this is just adulting, of course. The one thing I personally won't do is have an investment property just because of the admin you talk about, because it is not passive income. People think it's passive income. I'll tell you what is passive income. Owning a property ETF, because out there are a whole bunch of professional people sending rental invoices, kicking people out who don't pay, getting new tenants in, getting the leases done. That is passive income. So I'm a big fan of having property exposure in my equity portfolio primarily. It's a very good inflation hedge. It also, I like to think, gives me a little bit of a hedge against residential property prices absolutely running away while I'm not actually a residential property owner, because chances are very, very good that if residential property is cooking in South Africa, the best shopping centers, the best industrial properties, and maybe even offices are probably also actually doing kind of well. So there's a pretty decent hedge there, at least I like to think. Hopefully that will work out for me. I guess time will tell. And of course, you can have this property exposure in your tax-free savings account, which is fantastic. So we'll talk about that as well. But maybe let's talk then about some of Satrix's existing products in the space, and then we'll get to the new stuff. And the property sector on the JSE really is vibrant. It is super active. It's actually one of the sectors where historically we've had the most listings as opposed to delistings. It's tons of capital raising all the time. And it's because institutional investors are big supporters of the property sector. And so quite literally billions of rands, literally billions, flow into these companies and they can go and deploy it into properties. So very, very interesting space. And of course, that means that there's an index for it. Satrix tracks the index. So maybe we could just start there. You could give us a quick overview of some of Satrix's existing property products, stuff that investors might already be familiar with. As I said, it's something I already have in my tax-free savings account. So I get that beautiful REIT dividend without any tax whatsoever, which is fun. So yeah, give us the lay of the land, literally, in terms of the current Satrix offering around property.
So in the local property space, currently Satrix has two offerings, one on the ETF side and one in unit trust form. In the ETF side, that property ETF tracks the S&P SA Capped Property Index. That's a little bit different to the way sort of the JSE does it. They've obviously got a broader composite that they choose the property stocks from, not maybe a JSE all share. It's kind of a different broad market index that they start from. So what you'll find there is that there'll be some stocks in there that are not maybe specifically in the SAPI, the SA Listed Property Index, the FTSE JSE one, or the weightings will be different. It's also got a capping factor. So the stocks are capped at 10% at each quarterly index review. And so although it will move in line with the property sector, because of some of the weightings of the underlying constituents, you won't get the same as you would in the SAPI. And of course, in the SAPI, you know, the number of constituents there are capped at 20, only 20 constituents in the SAPI. And also that one also does a quarterly review. So on the unit trust side, we've got the SAPI, where we're tracking the SAPI and the unit trust. And then on the ETF side, we're tracking the S&P SA Property Capped Index. Again, we'll move sort of in line with the property sector, but you will just find the differences just in terms of the underlying constituents and how those constituents move. For example, in the ETF, we have HMN is in there at 3%, whereas it's not in SAPI. So there you'll get like a difference on returns depending on what that constituent does.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's why the fact sheets are obviously so important, is that you actually need to go in and just see exactly what is being tracked, what is actually in there, what you are getting, and, you know, go and check out those weightings as well, because that makes a big difference. And of course, the other thing in the property sector, specifically in South Africa, is a lot of these funds have got offshore exposure. So it's all good and well to say, well, I love the South African property story and I'm trying to maybe hedge against residential property going up, et cetera, et cetera. But if all of your money is sitting in a fund, and this is not something that would happen in an ETF, but if you go single stocks and you go and buy a fund that is focused on Poland, you know, that is not going to hedge you against South Africa in any way, shape or form. It's just not going to. So that is rather interesting and certainly something to take into account. And it's the old story, right, Lauren? Go and read the fact sheet. Go and understand what it is that you are actually buying, because that is the only way to do it when it comes to ETFs, is go and do the research. It's the old cliche, right?
Correct. And again, you know, ETFs, or at least index tracking ETFs, are quite transparent. All the information is there. The constituents are on the website every day. So you almost don't have an excuse to say, oh, I didn't know that that was what I was tracking. But all the information is there for investors to find.
Stuff like the capping really does make a big difference. So genuinely, go and have a look. There's always a sort of top 10 constituents list that shows you a lot of information in these fact sheets. Don't think that just because you're buying ETFs, you don't have to do research. You do have to do research. It's just different research to how you would do a single stock, for example. And it is also much easier. ETF research is much simpler than going and digging into all these companies, definitely. So having set the scene of the excellent current offering and a couple of the options there for different kinds of investors, in December, Satrix capped off the year by talking about a global property feeder ETF. Very interesting. So that will be under the code STXGLP. This now delivers international property opportunities to investors looking for further diversification. So again, if you are trying to hedge residential property in Cape Town, this one is not going to do it. But it will bring some excellent other exposure into your portfolio, certainly some offshore exposure, property specifically, obviously. But let's, before we even get into the details of the actual fund, this word feeder, can you tell us, because I know you're super involved in the operational side of the ETFs, we've done a show on that before. What is a feeder ETF for those who have seen this term before and always wondered what that is?
So maybe if we take a step back and just think about, you know, global indices, for example, your MSCI World, your S&P 500, there are like hundreds, and then in the MSCI World, thousands of stocks in those indices. As a local index tracking house, you know, it isn't viable for us to now go and buy every single stock in that index and hold it and rebalance it every quarter. Because the cost, first of all, will be high. And secondly, sometimes, you know, we can't get all the markets, or, you know, there's the currency efficiencies that we wouldn't be able to get. So what a feeder structure does is it says, instead of us going to hold every single stock underlying, we find a global ETF or foreign ETF, whichever one you want to call it. Maybe it's in the iShares range, maybe it's in one of the other index provider ranges. And we go and just buy that ETF. So there's only one holding in a feeder fund structure, and that holding is holding this master fund or this larger main parent fund. The wording's interchangeable, but it's one fund that we are holding, and that fund is then tracking the index. So we would get a return of the fund, which is in turn tracking the index underlying. And that also reduces the cost, because now we're only holding one instrument. We're not having to go and trade all of these underlying stocks. So it's just an efficiency in terms of how we can give global exposure, but in rands. So we buy the underlying in whatever currency it is, but we offer it to investors in rands. And that is really efficient in terms of currency, in terms of pricing for the end investor.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And that's exactly the point, right? Is it's a currency efficiency. So technically speaking, someone could go and buy this ETF overseas with their offshore money. So if you've already taken money out of South Africa, you've got, I don't know, a dollar-based brokerage account or whatever it is, you can go and buy this ETF right now.
That's correct, yes.
You can do it. But with the Satrix product, you can now do it without having to first take your money into dollars, for example. So that helps, because every time you're going into dollars, there are inevitably some pretty ugly fees around switching into currency. The bid-offer spread gets pretty wide. And also you're using up your allowance. So that's more of a consideration for, you know, big investors who, I mean, this is the lifelong dream for many of us, right? Is may I please get to the point where I feel irritated about only taking, what is it, 11 million rand out the country every year? Like, oh no,
exactly.
You know, today in first world problems. But, you know, jokes aside, like the currency, the bid-offer spread, that's a big one. And now just the ability to see it on your rand-based brokerage account. Because the reality is most South Africans, much as they like to, well, actually these days we complain a lot less. The rand is looking good. Things are looking much better. You go back to the depths of load shedding and no one wanted anything to do with the JSE. And even then, familiarity bias kicks in and South Africans just love seeing things quoted in rand. Things on the JSE. I see it with my own work. If I write about a South African stock versus a global stock, there's no competition here around what people are more interested in. So these are all of the factors that come in, right? Is just making it easier for people to actually get access to the stuff.
And I mean, it's a huge plus to be able to use your rands to buy an offshore investment. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? And also, you know, with Satrix, the way we offer it, you can do it on a monthly basis with a debit order. I mean, who would have thought that you can get offshore exposure? And also, if we go back to our conversation around your brick and mortar, your house, your investment property, a lot of our assets sit locally and we want to diversify and improve our exposure, and hereby you can improve that, but still using your rands. So it's a great concept for us to be able to offer this to investors. And on the flip side, though, you know, we must also be aware, like you spoke about, the Rand is doing really well at the moment, but there's always that currency risk in terms of offering it to you in Rands, even though the underlying investment is in dollars or euros. So that's another thing that investors must really be aware of. You might see, oh, the S&P did 10%, but you must think, okay, is that in dollars or in Rands? If I now look at the SATIX S&P 500, which is Rand denominated, and that did maybe 5%, you must remember that the Rand strengthened. So it's just something to be aware of, that currency risk is there, and also to be conscious that you can't just say, oh, but SATIX is underperforming because the S&P is doing this. But also just remember, in what currency is it performing?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing with offshore, right? You've got to have a currency decision, and then you've got to decide where your money is going, because you want to take the rands out the country when the rand is strong. Unfortunately, it's just human nature. So people panic at the worst time for them to panic. It's always when the rand is like flirting with 20 to the dollar, then everyone is taking their money offshore. Like, oh no, this thing is going to 30. It's over. It's done. We are Zimbabwe. Oh my goodness. And the money's gone. And then it comes back down to like 18. And now that wonderful advisor who told you that, you know, we are basically going to become a basket case, is gone. There's nowhere to be found. You know, they've made their money. So Yeah, this is the thing. Like, actually, when the Rand is doing really well like this, it is the time to think, okay, you know, what international exposure would I like to pick up? Because the Rand had a fantastic year. Look, I think it might have another pretty decent year, but we'll see what happens. It's off to a very good start.
It really is, yeah.
And the last few weeks, it really has been quite something to watch. So yeah, this is the benefit of diversification. There's no way to call these things on an individual basis. And you certainly shouldn't be holding one investment so that you sit there and cry yourself to sleep over, you know, oh no, the Rand strengthened. Then you're doing it wrong. Then your portfolio is not being managed as a portfolio.
Definitely.
So these things are considerations, the currency, et cetera, but they should always be seen in the context of the broader portfolio.
Exactly.
So speaking of broader portfolio and these exposures, then let's talk about the types of properties you'll actually find in here. Because as South Africans, when we look at REITs, we are very accustomed to big shopping centers. That's always in there. Logistics properties these days. So that's big warehouses, et cetera, et cetera. And also small ones, actually. And then offices, which people try not to talk about too much because that's still a little bit of a mess. Lots of offices got converted to residential. Vacancies are still not great. Negative reversions are still a problem. And we have like a sprinkling of specialist funds in South Africa, but we're very light on specialist property funds in South Africa. There are like a couple, literally. Storage is a very good example, which is, you know, as their name suggests, storage. But offshore, it's different. There are lots of specialists, right? So how much of that comes through in this ETF?
It's such an interesting sector, this global property sector, because things are changing every day for us. Like you say, moving from that bricks and mortar, office blocks, retail malls, to this, when developed markets, the universe includes so many different properties. And when I talk about that, it's from your traditional bricks to more like digital infrastructure. So for example, data centers fall within these properties now. And these are the backbone of cloud computing and AI and digital services, where they house the servers and the network equipment for these large tech companies. I mean, who would have thought that one day that's a property stock? Healthcare facilities, those are also now being rented out, or, you know, senior housing, hospitals, medical offices. And we've got this aging population and we're outsourcing this healthcare infrastructure. It's a huge global property play. And then again, another sector that we look at here is the telecom towers and speciality REITs that you spoke about. These towers are also being now constructed and seen as property. And this is supporting mobile connectivity and digital transformation around the world. So it's a very interesting time. It offers such huge diversification from what we're seeing in South Africa and what's offered in South Africa. And it looks at, you know, the structural growth of domestic economies and what is going to be required in the future from property, from what is available to investors in terms of property.
Yeah, the reason why a lot of these funds and these specialist funds have been spun out of traditional industries, I mean, you spoke about stuff like telecoms towers, that is a really good example. It's because property is just a very different asset to the operations of a business, and it attracts a very different kind of investor. So if you split out the operations of a business from something like its infrastructure, then you can actually reduce the cost of funding for the entire group, because suddenly infrastructure investors who see their particular assets as lower risk, they jump in and say, okay, we're prepared to fund the towers at a lower cost of capital than the actual operations of the tenant of those towers. Now, I've always wondered about that, to be honest, because in specialist funds, is the risk really so different? At the end of the day, what happens if that telco goes under? It's not like another one is going to jump in and immediately pick up all those leases. So obviously, the more specialized the properties, the riskier it is. But I mean, there's an entire industry of people who have dedicated their careers to quantifying that risk and actually taking a view on capital. And obviously CFOs of these groups then say, well, how do we optimize our cost of capital? Let's try and get different investors in. Let's split out the properties from the operations, etc. And there are still a lot of big corporates that have massive property portfolios sitting on their balance sheet that they haven't actually split out or done anything with. One of the really interesting local examples is actually ShopRite. They have a massive property holding. There've been many calls over the years for them to actually split that out and separately list it as a REIT, bring down their cost of capital, but you know, it's not something that they've done. And I guess a corporate consideration there is you got to wonder about loss of control of your properties, et cetera. So this is all very interesting stuff. And all of those decisions in boardrooms around the world eventually lead to the creation of these property funds, which then land in an index like this. So some very interesting stuff. And as you've mentioned there as well, some real growth areas like data centers, et cetera. Lots of debate around, are there too many data centers at the moment? Are there not enough? But this is the joy of investing, right? Is risk yes. and reward. You've got to figure these things out for yourself, right?
Yes. I think it's the change in the way business does business is consistent. And that is also, you know, something we want to see going forward, the digital transformation, and that you want to see that business are being mindful of that. And like you said, you know, taking your property out of your business and finding different ways to essentially leverage what you can out of those properties. And we're seeing that globally now. So it's a good direction we're going in. And it's, you know, I think because it's been in businesses before and now a lot of them are now spinning it off out of their business. It's not that it's new. It's not a new thing. So there is some trust there and some history there that we can look at and say, okay, yes, this is a good thing going forward.
The other nuance here is the tax, and we should definitely talk about that because the tax in this particular fund is quite interesting. There's a withholding tax benefit in the way that the fund is structured. So I guess as simply as possible for investors, let's call it individual investors specifically, who are sitting there going, okay, that's cool, that's interesting. What's in it for me from a tax perspective versus going and investing in the local ETF? What does the tax benefit really mean for investors in the ETF? And how do they see it coming through? Is this something that just comes through in the return of the ETF itself? So does the tax happen, you know, layers up and you just see it in your return? How does that actually work?
So as we spoke about earlier, this is a feeder fund. So the feeder structure calls for us holding a specific underlying foreign ETF. And the one that we have invested in is the HSBC FTSE EPRA Nareit Developed UCITS ETF. So a UCITS ETF is a specific legal structure that it's seen in Ireland as a like a CIS in South Africa. It's very similar to that. But in the same breath, that fund is Irish domiciled. So what it means is that HSBC has set up a company in Ireland and the fund itself is Irish domiciled. And the compelling thing about that is that there's a double taxation treaty between Ireland and the US. So what that means is that an Irish domiciled fund will not pay the full dividends withholding tax on US equities. And as we spoke about, a listed property is like an equity, right? So what happens with this double taxation treaty is that these Irish domiciled funds only pay 15% withholding tax on US stocks, not the 30%. And the fund, or let's say the index itself, 62% of that index sits in US stocks. So if you think about it, on 62% of your fund, you're now only paying 15% on your withholdings tax, not 30%. But the index itself assumes a 30% withholdings tax. And this creates a structural benefit where the fund would consistently outperform the benchmark because of the fact that you're paying 15% less on your tax. So that means net of fees, you're kind of getting that gain over and above your index for all time periods. And effectively what it does is it subsidizes the cost of the underlying fund. So because of the fact that you are now getting an outperformance of the index, you're actually gaining back your cost of your fund. And also that tax saving effectively offsets your fee. And that's a gain to the investor because you are, in inverted commas, not paying a fee because the fund has essentially gained that through that withholding tax benefit. So yeah, for me, that would mean that you are effectively in line with the index and everybody complains, oh, ETFs are always behind the index, But that's because of costs. So in this instance, you're going to see that the fund should essentially be in line with the index because of that gain from that withholding tax benefit.
Super interesting. So I'm looking at the top holdings in the underlying index once you go all the way down to what this thing is actually tracking. So just to give you an idea of diversification. So the biggest holding, and hopefully I'm looking at the right thing here, is Welltower.
Yes.
So now if you go and have a look at Welltower, it's actually super fun. So if you look at their sort of about us, they talk about being positioned at the center of the silver economy. Now, before you panic and you think that this is a mining company that is pretending to be a property company, what they are talking about is senior citizens in places like the US, the UK, and Canada. Exactly. So these are developed markets, which have, I will remind you, a serious birth rate problem, an aging population, lots and lots of older people who are getting older all the time, again, on average, not individually, because yes, of better healthcare. Yes. And that is interesting. Like, that is an interesting long-term fundamental underpin. There is nothing like that on the JSE. There is not a single property company on the JSE that is anything like that. So that's just one example. Then Prologis is second. That's basically the goat of logistics plays. That's the big one. That is the big one.
Yeah.
Also in the top five, Equinix and Digital Realty Trust. Those are both data center type plays.
Correct.
And then in fourth place is Simon Property Group, which is something I've researched on Magic Markets Premium a couple of times, which is, again, the goat of retail malls in the US. And again, in the US, if you actually have a look, there's like this horrible long tail of crummy malls that no one wants. It's a bit like their banks, but the best ones are fantastic. And Simon plays among the best ones. So that is a really interesting way to go and get that kind of exposure. You know, it's like almost 8% sits in Welltower. That's the senior citizen residential stuff. Prologis 7% and a bit. If you combine Equinix and Digital Realty Trust, you're looking at like 7.7%. That's the data centers among those two. There's probably some more further down. And then Simon at like 3.5%. And that's just your top five holdings. It's very interesting. I see there's a storage name down there. There's a couple of storage names down there, actually. So again, diversification. For anyone who thinks that diversification is not important, go back and listen to some of the podcasts we've done on this series with people like Kinsley, with people like Nikku. Just go and have a listen. You know, it's something we've spoken about, the whole team really, Sia, Duma, it's come up over and over again. It's come up in conversations with professionals way beyond Satrix, because everyone understands that diversification is important. So my favorite thing about this ETF is now there is a way on the JSE to actually go and get this exposure with a single investment. And like you say, a debit order. And I would encourage listeners, go listen to the discussion I had with Renee at the end of last year about how far things have come. It's absolutely incredible that you can set up a monthly debit order and a portion of your wealth every month will flow into assets like US senior citizen housing. Like, just contemplate how interesting that is as compared to going and hacking your way through that buy-to-let flat that you've owned since you were 25 and has gone nowhere in its value. I mean, I'm being slightly facetious, but go and speak to enough people who have done that and they all have pain in their eyes, especially, I'm afraid, if it's places like Joburg. There hasn't been much property growth over the past like 10 years. I actually went and looked just for fun. I went and actually looked at the apartment in Lone Hill where I lived during my articles, which I bought because I articled at a bank. And so you could get access to this super cheap funding. And obviously I had my parents in my ears of like, well, go and, you know, buy property. This is the thing to do. And that would have been almost 15 years ago now. It would have been like 14 years ago, whatever it is. I promise you, and I wish I was joking, those apartments are selling for the same price today.
Oh, gosh. That's ridiculous.
The same price. It is horrific. It is so bad. You know, so yeah, you got to be careful with this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, okay, maybe my experience is a bit different. In Cape Town, obviously, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's very regional. Yeah.
But then you get to a point where you also have to take the tax into consideration, because now your return is higher than what you're paying in terms of your bond payment and your interest. That's also an important thing to think about. And if we go back to having a Satrix investment and putting it in your tax-free savings account and the dividends that you get from this listed property ETF, those are not taxable. So it's a win-win situation if you now buy the ETF through Satrix and also put it in your tax-free savings account. It's like a no-brainer to really put a lot of those income-generating ETFs into your tax-free savings account and just gain in terms of the tax there.
Yeah, and people often use the argument, well, if you go and buy the physical property yourself, then you are getting the full upside on the capital and you've leveraged the thing. That's great. Now go take off your costs on the way in, which is your transfer duty, etc. And now your cost on the way out of an estate agent, and give me your average holding period. And, you know, unfortunately, the other argument that always happens is like, yeah, but I made money. And that's always how people unfortunately, when they haven't really been exposed to proper investment thinking, where you look at the world as an annual return, like a yes. compound annual return over time, the test is not, did you make a profit? If you made 1,000 rand on 1,000,000 rand over 10 years, yes, you made a profit, but you also didn't, because your friend who went and bought shares is definitely not sitting on 1,000 rand from his 1,000,000 rand or her 1,000,000 rand. So anyway, point is, it's always speak to your financial advisor, look at these things as a portfolio, etc. But I personally am a strong proponent of property ETFs, whether local or offshore. You know, that comes down to your personal decisions, what you want to own. I mean, that's where it gets really interesting. But I'm a big proponent of property ETFs rather than a buy-to-let investment. Owning the home you live in and you raise your kids in and it's close to the schools, that's a lifestyle decision where, you know, you have a lot of other things you need to take into account. But certainly buy-to-let, Lauren, I would say the ETFs are more interesting. Hey? So when are you selling your apartment and buying ETFs? That's the big question.
Let's not go there right now. Let's not go there right now.
The pain trade.
Yeah. And again, going back to diversification, you know, if you think about, it's not only what assets you have in your pension fund or in your other portfolios. You need to consider across all the bands. You know, if you think of your pension fund, yes, they're allowed to go with 45% now. But if you look at it, people, most of the funds are sitting at like 35, 38. It's not that full offshore exposure as yet. So there's an opportunity there to increase your offshore exposure with this global property fund. So it's really looking at the spectrum of what your assets are, whether it's your house, whether it's your pension fund, whether it's your investment property. We may not call it an investment property, but that other property that you rent out. It's just thinking around, you know, what does my total portfolio look like? And how can I improve that in terms of A, the dividends I'm getting out of it and the return and the tax efficiency of that total portfolio?
Just a final comment from my side. If you do invest in this thing now, let's say the Rand strengthens over the next 6 months and property overseas doesn't keep up with the level of the Rand strengthening. Don't be surprised if it doesn't give you an initial fantastic return, because your Rand-based assets have probably done better, you know? Exactly. And so again, it's part of a portfolio. You should never just have one ETF. And I would say if you are going to have one ETF, it shouldn't be offshore, because your life is in South Africa. So exactly. If you're going to have just one, which you should never do, you should be matching it to the currency that you spend in. That would be my kind of 2 cents worth, I suppose. But as a part of a portfolio, I think it's super interesting. It's listed currently, so you can go and search it. The code is JSCSTXGLP, and that is the Satrix Global Property Feeder ETF. Very, very cool. And final question from my side, Lauren. How long does it actually take to get one of these things off the ground? Like from when the team starts saying, hey, this is what we want to do, until we see this on our screens, how long does that actually take? Because I'm sure it's a lot. It looks simple from the outside. It's anything but simple on the inside.
We go with about 6 months. It also depends, because remember, you need your approvals via the FSCA, from your trustees, from the JSE. So those processes take quite long. Just, and then if there's any questions from the FSCA, from the JSE, from trustees, it's the back and forth. So I'd say this one took a little bit more than 6 months, but yeah. And then once all those approvals come through, there's obviously a JSE timeline in terms of creating that on the JSE. So yeah, it takes quite long from inception of the idea. And I must say that this idea has been around for a long time in terms of Satrix wanting to offer this global property offering to investors. It's just that at the time, we couldn't find an underlying fund that we wanted to buy into and that also gave us this Irish domicile. So it's taken us a while to get to that point where we've actually found an investment that we wanted to offer to local investors. So it's been a long time coming. I think if you look at our Satrix Balanced and Satrix Low Equity Index funds on the unit trust side, you see that we were already investing in global property now for the past, I think, since 2022. So it's already, as part of Satrix, it's one of our investment views to invest in global property. And we've been trying to bring this option to local investors outside of our balanced funds for a while. And this year it came to, in 2025, sorry, not this year, it came to fruition in December.
Fantastic. Congrats. Don't worry. My brain is still a little bit in 2025 as well. It's very early in 2026, but off to a good start for the team. Thank you, Lauren. Great start to the year. I really enjoyed this podcast. I look forward to a whole year of goodies with the Satrix team, obviously. And to you again, just happy new year to the listeners as well. Let's get this year off to a strong start. Lauren, I'm sure we'll be welcoming you back before too long to talk about something else. So thank you, and may your year get off to an excellent start.
Thanks so much for having me again, Ghost. Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting to you again this year.
Cool. Ciao.
Cheers.
Satrix Investments Pty Limited and Satrix Managers RF Pty Limited are authorized financial services providers. Nothing you have heard in this podcast should be construed as advice. Please do your own research and visit the Satrix website for more information on all their ETF products.